The National Broadcasting Company presents Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 18. Ladies and gentlemen, here's the director of Radio City Playhouse, Harry W. Junkin, to tell you something of tonight's play.
Thank you, Bob Warren. Ladies and gentlemen, in response to your many hundreds of letters asking to hear him again, we're very happy to welcome Mr. John Larkin back to Radio City Playhouse. 2 weeks ago, he played the part of Lloyd Bruckner in The Door and gave a performance which drew rave notices from all over the country. Tonight, Mr. Larkin appears in a similar type of play, but in a diametrically opposite type of role, the role of a writer, an intellectual who is a little cynical, a little disillusioned, and highly indignant at society over the conviction of a 20-year-old boy for murder. The script is called Five Extra Nooses and was written by Charles Lee Hutchings, a writer new to Radio City Playhouse and from whom we hope to receive more plays in the very near future. We like this particular script because it is both entertaining and socially significant, a combination of ingredients which few writers achieve. Here, then, is John Larkin as the writer in Five Extra Nooses by Charles Lee Hutchings, Attraction 18 on Radio City Playhouse.
Nice, cozy jail you got here, Warden.
Yep.
All these cells empty?
Yep.
Maybe you got an answer to the housing shortage.
Look, I don't like reporters, and I don't think that was funny.
I'm not a reporter. I write for magazines. And I don't particularly care what you think.
This kid's done a murder, and he's going to hang in the morning, and you come nosing around like a dog.
Stick to your job, Warden. You know I got permission from way up top, or I wouldn't be here tonight.
Well, the kid's in this cell here. Hi, Jake. It's the Brighton guy I was telling you about.
What's the type?
Now, you don't have to talk to this guy if you don't want to, see? That's what the boss told me. He said you don't have
hold
to...
Hold it, Bob, hold it. Look, kid, here's the setup. I went to a lot of trouble to get the okay to see you. I want to get in that cell and talk to you for a few minutes. I'm going to write a story for a magazine.
Was he here before?
No, I'm not a newspaper reporter. I just want to talk to you for a few minutes.
Now, you don't have to. You don't have to even talk to him. The boss said...
Oh, wait a minute. Look, kid, I got permission from the top guy to come and see you tonight. I'll just come in there and you can... Well, you can watch me write my story. Did you ever see anybody write a story? Won't do you any harm. Might do some good. For somebody.
I don't know. I guess it'll be all right.
Let me in.
You don't have to, kid.
Open the door and let me in. You heard the kid say it's okay.
All right.
I don't go in for space. Not enough room in here to swing a I'll sit on the edge of this cot and get going.
What's that?
What's what?
What you got in that black bag? You a doctor? Who are you anyway?
Take it easy now. That's not a black bag. That's my typewriter in a black case. Here, see? It opens up, sets up on its own legs, like this. I've set that baby up on the deck of a battleship and in a tent in Holland and Berlin and Tokyo.
I never seen no typewriter like that. Was you at the war?
Yeah, war correspondent. Fought the battle of the space bar. What were you doing while the war was on?
Oh, moving around. They said I wasn't old enough to get in the Air Force. Hey, you heard anything about me?
What do you mean?
You know what I mean. Yesterday they told me. He said no.
Oh, you mean about your sentence? Well, I heard that no was final.
Tomorrow morning. What's the time now?
It's about 10:30. Now, let's get going.
What's the time, I asked you?
It's 25 minutes to 11. And that's right, by radio. Now, look, I'm here to write a story. You can watch if you like. Tonight, I am sitting on the edge of a prison cot in the cell of a condemned murderer. Between him and the rope which will break his neck and choke the breath from his throat are 9 hours of tortured darkness. Soon the collective hand of society will reach out and pull the lever that will spring the trap and send his feet kicking in midair in the death struggle. Perhaps the collective conscience of society will permit itself a slight qualm. As I write, the murderer watches me. He is nothing more than a big, boned, hulking, somewhat dull kid who continually trembles. And he will die in the first light of the morning. I shall write, then, about the court which should have tried him. It is a purely imaginary court, a court that exists only in this article that I write. But it is a special court, a very special court.
This is a special court, a most unusual court sitting tonight in judgment on the ordinary people. You and you, and you, who lead what might be called a blameless life. But now you see, a new American law has been passed which reads in part, quote, whereas the state decrees that no one lacking 21 full years in age can now alone be held responsible for any murder, it is ordered that a minimum of 6 shall then be hanged if one such youth is condemned to die. Unquote. Now that's the law. And suddenly we find that such a youth coming under the requirements of the act is to be hanged tomorrow morning. And so this court's been called to quickly find the necessary 5, the 5 additional nooses which await along with the 1 society's decreed for the young murderer. Acting for the state in this emergency, a young man, a writing fellow, I believe, will now address the court.
Your Honor, there is little time. The crack of dawn is our deadline, and there seems to be a wealth of candidates for those 5 extra nooses. Your officers are rounding up some prospects now. I must request a brief recess while I investigate a few and gather evidence to find the necks which do most rightfully belong in those 5 extra nooses.
Belong in those 5 extra nooses.
What time is it?
It's exactly 21 minutes to 11.
What's all that stuff you're putting down there?
Well, that's what we call a lead on my story. It's about an imaginary court that doesn't really exist and that... Look, kid, you don't need to be afraid of me. I can't do you any harm or any good.
I'm not scared of you or anybody. What time is it? Look here, you. Why don't you go away? Why don't you take
the warden will hear you. Shh. Look, kid, take it easy. Now, tell me about where you went to school, things like that.
What for?
Oh, never mind what for. How'd you get along with the teachers?
Okay. Except for old Lady Passness. She put me out of class one day. I wasn't doing nothing. She just jumps me.
Then the first person we shall call in this imaginary court of mine, this very special court, is the teacher of this boy who is to hang tomorrow.
Order. You are the teacher of the boy who is to hang tomorrow.
What if I was? Is that a reason to haul a person into public court?
We don't know. Yet. We'll see if your indignant neck will fit into one of our 5 nooses. Will our writer-prosecutor state the facts?
You didn't like this boy. You put him out of class one day. That day, I think, was chapter 1 in this particular story.
Fiddlesticks. He was a bad one. Bad. I will remember him. He used to bother little girls, if you know what I mean.
Spare us the details and get on. You tossed him out. What then?
I don't have time to trifle with his type. Do you know what happens when one apple in a basket is not good?
It isn't headline news. Now then, as inspector of this human fruit, how did you dispose of this bad apple, which I think was only slightly bruised about that time?
I sent him to the principal and got on with the lesson. I remember I wrote a note. It said, I will not have this youth back in my class. He is...
a potential murderer. Did you write that?
Why, no. Oh, no, of course not. He was just a boy.
Your Honor, we waste time, I think, with her. This teacher is no better and no worse than others. And it's true, she has no time to spend on battered fruit. Let's have the principal.
I am the principal, and I consider it an imposition to be summoned into court. I have more important
duties. Let's hear what the prosecution thinks. We've got to find some next for these five nooses.
How then did you dispose of this unworthy apple, cast out from the perfect company?
You mean this fellow that they're going to hang? Now, let's have no nonsense. I simply strapped him soundly.
Adding yet another bruise or driving deeper the same blemish. And what then?
I sent him home. I gave him a sharp note to show his parents. Look. Do you know I have 600 pupils in my school, and there's no time for nonsense with just one?
He tore that note to pieces and wandered to a racetrack where an older fellow told him how to beat this little rat.
I did my duty to my pupils.
And helped a boy to graduate to murder. Your Honor, I would say we have but sympathy for this, an overworked and underbestowed official who sees his simple duty. He has no time, he says. It happens, though, that through his minor punishments, justly and sternly meted out for minor crimes, he did set the rigid pattern for the larger crime, and so it's he must share the larger punishment.
I find it so. In that enclosure, we have set five places for five people. Those to fill the five additional nooses now decreed by our new law. You, sir, the principal, may take your place in the first of these. And may God give you full marks and pass you on.
So we hang the principal. How many were there in your family?
Me, Tom and Harry, and Isabel and Sarah.
Were you afraid of your father?
Nah, I wasn't afraid of him or anybody else. He used to come home stinking on Saturday nights. We'd all run out and hide in the dump behind our house.
Did he ever catch you?
Nah. Mostly he'd go back in the house and pass out.
Has your father been to see you here?
Uh-uh. I ain't seen him since the cops ran him out of town.
And so to this imaginary court about which I write, we will summon this youth's parents, his mother and his father. Let them be heard in this strange and special court. First, we'll call upon the mother.
Quiet. You are the mother of this youth.
Yes, sir, Your Honor. He was one of mine. I've always done my best, but Jake was too much for me. I licked him all right proper. But Jake could never bowl. He'd stand and kind of shiver as I whacked him with the strap. He never was no good. But once he stood up to his pa when he was kicking little Sarah. I kind of liked the way he heaved that rock and hit his paw.
Your Honor, we're wasting time with this poor travesty of motherhood. At the moment when this woman's hands were needed to caress with tenderness and loving care, they were filled with scouring wool and busy with the corridors in someone else's house.
And when her understanding might have torn away dark fears, permitting her poor brood to see the light, her mind was occupied with pennies dropping in the jar to pay the rent and buy the jug. The liquid equalizer that made her just as good as anyone.
Take her away and send her home. Bring us the father and the piece. There may be something there.
I ain't been in trouble now for years. You ain't got nothing on me, see? And I read about our Jake in the papers. I was 300 miles away from here. I can prove it. I'd admit
Hold that... Hold it. Keep your small confessions for a court which has more time. There are four nooses left to fill. And morning comes so very soon.
Four nooses? What is this? I ain't never done no worse than some receiving. You can't string up a guy for that. Now, look, I know my rights. I'm wise to all the angles, and I'm telling you, you can't mix me in any murder, rep.
By some quaint caprice of nature, you are in it. It seems to me that we can save some time here by nominating for a noose this bright-eyed, dodging rodent to whom fatherhood was but an odious consequence of turning in his bed one wretched night.
He hangs. Remove him to the place marked number 2. And may God find something where your soul should be.
What are you putting down all that stuff for about extra nooses? You wrote something about my father. He ain't even here.
Oh, skip it. It's just a magazine article about a court that doesn't even exist. So you went to industrial school and you worked as an exercise boy at the track, hmm? Did you ever get into court? That is, before now?
Nah. They didn't catch me but once. That was just a juvenile court. All I had to do was report.
Mm-hmm. Say, where did you learn how to use a gun?
What do you mean? Say, what are you trying to do anyway? I don't have to even talk to you, like the warden
okay,
said.
Okay, okay. I just wondered if you used to practice on a rock or a bottle or something.
Nah. I never even fired a gun before in my life. I never even seen a real gun before.
When you fired that first shot, did it seem to make a lot more noise than you'd seen in the movies?
Yeah. Yeah, it did. And it sort of jumped in my hand. I'd never seen that neither. And there was a funny burning smell. Hey, what you getting at, huh? I don't have to tell you. I don't even have to
tell you. Shut up. Sit down. Never even smelled powder. And so we'll call upon a social worker in my imaginary court.
You, sir, are a social worker. Let us hear from you.
I do my work, and that's all I know. These theorists who build up pedestals for petty crooks, they talk and talk of recreation centers and flower-bordered playgrounds where there is no sin and boys will all be boys, or captains of the local nine. I think if they would step outside and see their precious little heroes happily engaged in gouging eyes or picking locks, then they might do some good. And furthermore...
Hold on, my little man, and we'll explain. You are a candidate for our next noose, and we will see how well you fit it. Let's have the evidence.
The facts are plain, Your Honor, that this embittered civil servant is employed in juvenile affairs, and thus he specializes in the task of bending the twig so that the tree shall grow up fine and straight. I feel that he's not to blame. It's just that he has not the time, the wit, nor the weight for such a monumental task. Take him away. Let's have words with his superior. His legislator.
You call on me. I represent the people and can say, without the fear of contradiction, that I do my duty by those fine, upstanding souls who vote for me. Well, what is this? A farce and mockery in the name of justice? A court without a prisoner? A trial which brings out honest people from their beds?
A politician. We've no time for speeches. Our job is filling nooses, not extracting votes.
You figure in this piece by having hired such little men as these who juggle juvenile delinquents and fill out the necessary forms. Give us the facts.
They are all directed at this man, who was elected by the people to speak up for the rights of all the families in the very district from which our youth in waiting sprung. I nominate him for a noose, Your Honor, for he did nothing when the need for action screamed out loud from every dirty hovel and dead end. He voted thousands for a waterway and kept his eyes uplifted as he cried for all to see how well he carried out his solemn pledges one by little one.
What is this arrant nonsense? Didn't I applaud the move to build more parks and carry out my promises? Why, I even voted for a grant to beautify the waterfront. And if our appointed courts can't do their stuff...
The buck is swiftly, deftly passed along. Without more time, I'll state sufficient reason why this man should rate a noose. He sees the value of transplanting shrubs and trees to where they'll get more chance. What shuts his eyes and leaves a human being to twist and struggle and perhaps to rot among the garbage in which fell the seed.
We have no time to belabor our decisions in this court. You take place three and wait until we have the other two. You, the politician, are elected. Next.
The man who hatched the murder plot, the one who gave the lesson on the gun.
Look, Your Honor, I'm a movie producer, but radio, magazines, they're all the same. Guns, murder plots, what else? I'm sick to death of amateurs who make a couple of bucks a day and yet can tell me how to run my business. No, I make pictures. Four-star pictures that you see by making up your mind that you will pay to go into the show. I don't drag you in.
This time you've gone too far, or maybe not quite far enough. Your picture showed the youth that he could scare a big man with a little gun.
And did you see the picture too, my friend? And did you see the criminal at last waiting with fear for his reward in jail?
And so again, crime did not pay. But pictures pay, and Bogart lived again, and Robinson and Ladd again next week will swagger with their rods and set a million youthful trigger fingers twitching. Sure, you showed the criminal in irons, but in full grease paint and with lights picking the romantic sweat beads on his brow. I'll show you a murderer in a cell and send you creeping out with crawling flesh. His drooping mouth wouldn't take well. He whimpers, and then he throws up on the floor.
Oh, you can't show that. Now, look, I've got to get away. We're shooting, and each minute costs a fortune.
You stay here. And I'll support the lead in this particular piece. You got a young man started up to where the gun went off. Then he was on his own. No lines, no lights, no patterns. Now you will direct him to the end.
Number four now has a neck. And so we move along and hope the critics will approve your closing sequence. There is but one noose left to fill. Who is this candidate?
Your Honor, he's an average citizen and far removed from any thought of crime or sin.
Ah, you're darn right, and I'll have you know I pay my taxes, and they're plenty. If those we put in office aren't enough, why, throw them out and put some others in.
We found him in his slippers by the fire, listening to the radio, and his hand was on the knob so that he could turn it down and air his views in no uncertain terms.
You're darn right. I'm not a politician. If I were, you'd see some action, you can bet. This crime wave now. Don't spare the rod. It's good old-fashioned discipline we need, the lash and things like that.
You're somewhat incoherent. Like the headlines which you study thirstily to gain your meager knowledge of your times. Do you know who assisted in the murder for which a youth will hang tomorrow morning?
All I know is that we need protection, that the honest may sleep safe within their home.
Perhaps there's been too much of this sound sleeping. Perhaps you'd better stay awake and take a look. Because, my friend, you figure in this murder, if I may make a joke, right up to your neck. Now, first we'll have the Institute of Learning, a man you hired to educate the boy, his school principal.
I strapped him soundly and I sent him home. I have no time. I have too many pupils. I did my duty and I threw him out.
And here, old citizen, your chosen speaker who carries out your business, makes your laws. Your legislator.
Oh, enough of this. I have no time for trifling. You know my stand on crime. I'm against it.
Still no time. Mr. Citizen, these men you hire are burdened down with matters of great importance. Who is then to turn a hand to helping this fellow who is tossing in that giant stream which flows by your front door?
Now, look at here. I know your angle, but I wonder if you've heard about the outfits which go around doing things to help the poor.
We've all seen and applauded that brave, slim trickle of human kindness which drips so gallantly into an arid desert of inhumanity.
Wait a minute. Where's the kid's father? He's the one. I always say that crime begins at home. Now you take my two boys.
We know them well. They shine and glow and grow up all surrounded by the fences which you've built to keep them safe from nasty things like crime. Here is the father.
I ain't been in trouble now for years. When Jake shot this guy, I wasn't even here. It ain't my rap.
So there, you citizen, that's how you got another son. Not one so bright or well-behaved as those two you have mentioned, but one abandoned, one kicked out, bruised and battered. One not quite so well endowed in the beginning. He is a son of yours. Not by an act of fatherhood or love, but by a greater principle example some 2,000 years ago, he is your son.
Your Honor, the time is getting on. I say that this citizen should fit the final noose.
That's fine. I do agree, since he does cry so long and lustily for the rewards which do arise from membership in our fair state, then he must help to put them in. Citizen, the fifth and final noose. Hey, you and I, your time's up. Come on out.
Okay, Warden. Well, that's all, kid. I'll take this typewriter and how you fix the smokes.
I don't smoke. Are you going to do anything about me?
No. Nothing I can do.
How about all that stuff you put down? Was that just a story?
Yeah. Just a story.
This way, Al.
Hey, you! With that typewriter! You gotta do something! You gotta do something! You gotta!
You have just heard Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 18, Five Extra Nooses, written by Charles Lee Hutchings and directed by Harry W. Junkin. John Larkin starred as the writer. Others in the cast were Paul Nugent, Jack Lloyd, Adelaide Klein, Mort Lawrence, Eugene Francis, and Joe Helgeson. The music was composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shield. Radio City Playhouse is supervised for the National Broadcasting Company by Richard P. McDonough.
This is Harry Junkin again. Next week, The Heritage of Wimpole Street, the story of what happened when the son of Elizabeth Barrett Browning returned to England after his mother's death in Italy. It's a warm and beguiling story, and we're sure you'll enjoy it. Be with us next week for The Heritage of Wimpole Street, Attraction 19 on Radio City Playhouse.
Robert Warren speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.